Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, we have Michael Snydell.
I'm back.
He's back. And can we say better than ever or not?
Sure.
All right,
sure. I'll go the Bill route.
we're gonna hold you to that. And we also have Bill Graham. And our intro music today is She Drives Me Crazy by the Fine Young Cannibals. That is in honor of this week's primary review, and that is Raw, the new French horror film from director Julia Ducournau, I hope is how you say that name. And I can't wait to talk about this film, guys. Holy crap. We could have talked about something like Beauty and the Beast if we cared about ratings, but we don't. We care about quality, and that is what we are here to discuss. Did any of us see Beauty and the Beast anyway?
I think I might end up going see it.
Inside Baseball, I had a screening, but it was 3D, so I was not doing that.
Yeah, no. I can't imagine that helps that movie. But anyway, we are here today to talk about an obscure independent French horror film that I think premiered at Toronto and got a lot of good traction, so hopefully people will be interested. It's out in limited release, but we love to do this, and we hope that people will go and seek out the quality over the mass-produced, tube-fed nonsense that Hollywood likes to pump into most theaters. I don't know
if you're in Chicago, it's at the Music Box Theater, so if you're in one of the big cities, you definitely have a chance to see this on the big screen.
I honestly don't know if this is in Washington, and I'm going to assume not, because Washington, in general, sucks. So, that's that. Let's move on. You can follow us on Twitter, at Film Stage Show. Find us on Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes and give us a comment and a rating if you are so inclined. We love to get those, and if we do get them, we tend to read them on air. So I'm actually going to read this comment that we got on the iTunes, because it was super great. Also, it's 5 stars, so you know we love that. And this is from Clarissa Examines It All. I'm a new Film Stage listener, and I'm really enjoying the podcast thus far. I love discussing film, but can rarely find people enthusiastic about the art of filmmaking to have an honest dialogue with. So listening to you guys is great. It's really entertaining, albeit exasperating, to hear the uncensored opinions of an all-male group about social and cultural topics like grief and feminism that tend to appear in quality cinema. That being said, I absolutely loved your episode on Manchester by the Sea. It was incredibly refreshing to hear such raw, emotion-filled discussion about a movie. You brought up very important points about how the main actor and overall theme of the film, resulting in a fairly uncharacteristic podcast for you three. However, I'm also a fan of the comedic relief, and although I don't always agree, it's a stimulating show. So, if your name is indeed Clarissa, thank you, Clarissa. That was, in fact, one of the best reviews that we have ever received. And we are not unaware of how odd it is that we are three white, straight men hanging out, talking about movies and tending to go for the more, like you said, quality cinema that brings up a lot of stuff that does not just apply to us, and we feel a deep amount of shame about that. So just be aware that
I feel great about it.
You feel great about it? Hashtag not all men. So we're not unaware.
No.
we're not unaware of our demographic makeup here. go listen to the old stuff when we had Amanda on. She talks about how a guy who trolled her, she'd probably birthed calves bigger than him. We all miss Amanda.
Interesting description. Okay.
She was not shy about the fact that, like, she grew up on a farm.
Sure.
It was pretty great. Michael replaced her. How dare you, Michael? So, let's...
Send all hate mail to @Snydell.
Michael Snydell single-handedly made this a less diverse podcast. Now that we've laid all the blame for that on Michael.
We really like Michael.
No, Michael's way. Michael's great. You know,
thanks,
let's keep talking about him like he's not here.
Is he on mute? He's on mute, right?
Yeah, I've muted him. He can't hear any of this.
Okay, so what happened? I've been on mute this whole time. What's up?
Nothing. You're great. We love you. So let's. That's about it. Let's talk about Mubi for a second, though, because Mubi is our sponsor and we love them.
What is Mubi, Brian?
You don't know what Mubi is, Bill. I know you don't pay attention, but Jesus. So for Bill, because
guys,
Bill's a moron.
I forgot.
That's true. It's been a week since I brought up Mubi, so Bill probably forgot what Mubi is. Mubi is a streaming online cinema where, unlike the Netflixes and Amazons of the world, where they just throw a bunch of stuff down and say, here, eat it, pigs. Mubi carefully hand selects a new film each day for you to watch. I just have to say, I don't know why I'm being so combative about the general entertainment industry today, and I apologize. But Mubi doesn't have to apologize, because Mubi is great. They hand select a new film each day for you to watch. You have 30 days to watch. And over that period of time, you can actually download the film so you can watch it on the go if you are going to be somewhere where there's no internet, no LTE service. They've got a bunch of great films coming out soon. One of them is Between Fences. This is part of their Special Discoveries series. And these are focusing on refugee experience with two powerful documentaries. This one in particular is about asylum seekers from Eritrea and Sudan living in an Israeli detention center. So that is both astoundingly interesting and also very relevant to the times in which we live. So if you would like to be able to see movies that you would not otherwise be able to see, selected by people who really care about movies, go to Mubi, that is MUBI.com, and for your free 30-day trial, all you gotta do is slap onto the end of that /filmstage, and you will get a free 30-day trial on us so that you too can wonder and awe at the glory that is Mubi. So that's MUBI.com/filmstage, and that is that. So gentlemen, are we prepared to talk about Raw?
I'm ready.
Absolutely.
Bill, you did watch this movie and remember at least half of it?
Yes.
Great.
Yes,
so in case you did forget, Bill, Raw is about a young girl who's a vegetarian who goes to a veterinary college and begins to experience a craving for meat of a very familiar variety. Like I said,
guys, I just want to say I have two vet students currently staying with us at our apartment right now, so it feels thematic.
You gotta get out, bro. What are you doing there? We gotta talk. Okay, well, first I'm gonna play the trailer, and then we can talk about stuff. I just want to say, for anyone who's listened to this show in the past, you know that when I play a trailer for a foreign film, it's kind of a formality. So here it is. It's, yeah. It's, I mean, there's like some music and Foley work and no dialogue. So that is the extremely descriptive trailer for Raw, which is out in limited release now. I still think that the best, like, nonsensical trailer dialogue or audio that I've put in ever has to be when we reviewed The Tribe.
Yes.
All right. So this is Raw. Again, it is directed and co-written. Oh, I'm sorry. It's actually fully written by Julia DeCournau, which, again, I hope I am saying correctly. And it stars... God. All right. So yeah. let's just all bear with me while I try to do this. Garance Marié as Justine and Ella Rumpf as Alexia. That's as deep as I'm going to go. That's all you're getting out of me. I am not great with French names. All right. So, gentlemen, let us talk about Raw. Michael Snydell, you were missing last week, so make up for your absence in the hearts and minds of our listeners by telling us what you thought of Raw.
Ooh, can I break in real quick?
Oh, my God, Bill. Yes. What do you want?
I just want to mention that if you watch this trailer and then go into this movie expecting that trailer, which I think we've probably all seen, which is like demented and dark and scary and weird, that is not this movie. So I just want to let audience members know kind of off the bat that if they're watching the trailer and then they end up seeing the movie, to not expect the exact same.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay. It's an interesting one to point out, but okay.
I had not actually seen a trailer for this movie. I just heard about it. I had like known that it was coming and I didn't need to see a trailer.
The trailers for this. Michael, did you see the trailer for this?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I had to sell my girlfriend on watching it.
And it looked creepy as fuck, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple pretty creepy scenes in this movie that have potentially nothing to do with cannibalism that we'll get into.
Well, yeah. It takes place at a vet school. I mean,
maybe something with an eyeball anyway.
Michael Snydell.
Almost spoiling things there, guys. All right.
You bastard.
So, yeah. So I guess I loathe to mention this, but I guess it's relevant in at least talking about my expectations. So people may have first heard about this movie back at TIFF, not only because it was getting buzz, but specifically because people were reacting in very visceral ways. There were people who were fainting in theaters. There were people who threw up and like walked out. And so it's kind of been couched in... I hesitate to say things like Human Centipede, but there is definitely some lineage of like French extremism movies, yeah, you know, things like Trouble Every Day, things like Inside.
Martyrs.
But yeah, Martyrs. But I have to say,
it's like,
actually, I found this.
It's like Dare Cinema, you know, like I dare you to watch this. It's apparently so crazy.
Sure.
Like things get couched in that way and it gets hard to like talk about them outside of it.
Yeah, yeah. But what I would say is I was very pleasantly surprised. That's not really what this is. In that it takes the primary conflict very seriously. And it does feel very much like a debut. That sounds very backhanded, but there is just a lot of rough stuff around the edge, but I think this is an excellent debut, and I'm really excited to see what DeCournau does next. She has an excellent cast here, which we'll talk further about, just in terms of Marié, in terms of what she, the arc of physicality she brings to this role, and how she plays on these very obvious archetypes of like this bookish introverted young girl. But I guess what I'm getting at is what I like so much about this film is that the tone has a really nice balance of wanting to be provocative and leaning into the body horror without making that the whole movie. Like this is very much a character study by the end, punctuated by some gruesome moments. And I don't think it all quite holds together, which I will get into in spoilers, but I think this is this is a really great debut, like, as a visual stylist. Like, Du Carnot just has a great sense of kineticism. Just, you can see it in, and even scenes like an early party scene and a club scene. She just brings this infectious energy to the movie, and that's not even getting into a really careful hand with the tone, which is just crucial for this. So I really enjoyed this. I'm not sure it holds together completely as a film. It's just a little bit less tight script wise than I would like, but the performances are excellent. There's all these very neat sequences, and it's a really interesting subversion of what we expect in these the woman as monster genre. Like, it's definitely taking it more seriously and giving it the respect that the subject deserves.
All right, Bill Graham, what are your thoughts?
I have to agree with Michael on a lot of points. I think there are some rough around the edges moments, but I think overall, this is a very, very strong debut. I was struck by how funny the film is at certain points. I was not expecting a lot of comedy. And there is kind of a sick, slick sense of humor to the film throughout. There's little moments here and there. And I love what it does with, like, how it uses technology and how it uses our current world in, like, not allowing her to escape. This little compound, I guess, where she's going to vet school is pretty interesting. I guess it is a working veterinarian.
Yeah,
right.
At some point we gotta just talk about this vet school.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I think that'll be a spoiler discussion.
Sure.
Yeah.
I can't wait to. That's gonna be the first thing we talk about. Spoilers.
It's pretty crazy.
What is going on here? Anyway, go ahead, Bill.
I enjoyed that aspect of it. I think it's got a slick sense of humor. If you can kind of pick up on it and really kind of run with it. I love the sister kind of storyline going on at the heart of the film. I think it's a beautiful film in that it also deals with, like, repercussions in a way for what's actually happening on screen. It seems like it isn't for a little while, and then towards the end, you definitely see some of the repercussions of the actions that the main character and the sister kind of take throughout the film.
Bill, but I'm sorry. I just remembered one thing. I just wanted to quickly add to what you just said.
Sure.
I like, at the same time, that it doesn't feel like a demonization in the same way as some of these films. It's not like a punishment needs to come to this woman for what she's going through. And I feel like that's something that's in a lot of horror films, especially surrounding or focusing on women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. And I think the performances are really good, and I really enjoyed the way it was shot in a lot of ways. There's some really, really clever sequences and things like that. Everything in this film seems like it kind of happens in a haze in a way. And I like that about the main character and the story that it kind of ventures to tell, in that at times you're not quite sure when in the timeline things are happening. And I like that aspect of the film, that it makes you work to kind of keep up with the narrative that it's telling. Overall, I think there's just so much to talk about in terms of spoilers and in terms of setting the tone and what's going on in the film. It's hard to talk around this film in a way. but I really enjoyed it. I want to reiterate that if you're going in expecting a straight up horror film, it is not what this film is. This is more of a thriller. It's more of an intrigue
kind of thing.
This is more Drag Me to Hell than like any.
Yeah, I don't know if it's quite as comedic as Drag Me to Hell, but yeah, it's definitely over the top and it's definitely going for kind of reactions. And yet I don't think any of the things that I see here are necessarily all that. Like Drag Me to Hell had some sequences where,
yeah,
like, woof.
Sure.
This film doesn't quite go that way, because even the subject matter that it ultimately is exploring, it's not that foreign of a concept and things like that. I think the film is just smart in the way it's kind of going about the story it's telling. But unfortunately, some of the means to get people to sit down in front of this film may not quite sell it the same. So, Brian, I think you definitely need to watch the trailer that I watched after we get done with this podcast, and I'm curious to see your reaction to that.
You know, on that note, I remember that I saw Margaret without seeing the trailer, and then I put the trailer on, and I think it was before I was playing trailers live during this whole shebang. And I remember Nick Newman saying, "You're going to freak out when you see what the trailer for Margaret was," because it made it look like a teenage sex comedy.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, whoever made this trailer really did not understand this movie. So now I'm interested to see the trailer for Raw, because I feel like it would be very easy for someone to say, "Oh, we got this like slow burn psychological type of thriller about a girl kind of coming of age and finding herself. But if we just put in the parts where all the bad stuff happens and put in some of the hazing stuff without any context, I bet we can make this seem real fucked up." So I nailed it.
Well, I think it's in the same vein as like when they were trying to figure out how to, you know, advertise something like The Witch. Like Raw also falls into this weird niche that, you know, they're going to lead more into the body horror than the, you know, like feminist exploration quality. Yeah. Like it's just, that's easier to sell.
So I quite enjoyed this film. I have a soft spot for French thrillers because I don't know if it's just the ones that I've seen or whatnot, but they always seem to juke in a direction that you don't expect them to go, and they don't take the easy path, and I really enjoy that. So I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. I enjoyed the kind of raw formalism of some of the longer long-distance compositions. You know what, Michael? Shut up. So I enjoy that stuff. I can get behind that. And I don't feel...
You said raw formalism, Brian.
Oh, I didn't even realize. I'm sorry. I thought you hated the idea of, like, static long distance shots of people walking across like a plaza.
No, just raw formalism.
Well, Jesus Christ, I'm sorry that I accidentally used the title of the film. I didn't, it's not like I leaned into it. Like, this film has raw talent. This film has, it's a raw, I don't know, it doesn't matter. So, this director really sinks her teeth into some of her compositions.
I'm expecting a lot of food metaphors here, Brian.
I guess it's possible. I never plan out my food metaphors, though, so that's the thing. Like, I'm not, like, watching this movie and going, oh, I can compare this to a piece of lettuce.
You just have, like, a list.
And this to a gumball. That's actually a really good food metaphor. Not for this movie in particular, but, like, for any movie that has pretensions of like saying something meaningful, but in the end it's just like a nonsense movie. It's like, yeah, it's a gumball wrapped in a piece of lettuce. It's still not good for you, but it tries. So let's move on. let me talk about this movie. So Raw is good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I enjoyed, like I said, the formalism of certain scenes contrasted against a little more anarchic sense in other scenes. I feel like this is a movie that toys with the Michael Haneke aesthetic now and then, but doesn't allow itself to get bogged down in it like a lot of other first-timers who want that kind of cold, chilly atmosphere get. I feel like this movie actually has energy beneath it, and that each scene was considered alongside every scene that would come after it, so that it didn't feel choppy. It didn't feel like the director was just trying to show off from scene to scene. This was very clearly a full story in their mind. They modulated very well throughout the entirety of it. I thought that the acting was good, though it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell in a foreign film. Apparently, because we really liked on this episode, or on this show, well, no, it was really just me. So Nick and Danny and I, when we first began, really enjoyed Sleepless Night.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah. And then we found out that apparently, like, it's terrible in France because the acting...
Yeah, they hate it.
The acting isn't good from their standard because it's too, like, Americanized, and they said that the guy didn't really seem like a real French guy, which, like, I don't know. I just like the part where he, like, fucks up the zipper on a bag to buy himself some time. So, that's, like, a problem that I have. But for me, cinema is such an experience that if I'm not being drawn out, and I have seen foreign films where I think to myself, my God, what is that person doing? Then I think it works. I think it works as a pure experience. And I think that this worked as a pure experience. Michael, I'm saying pure now instead of raw, so you can be okay.
You're fine. Right.
So, and I think that there's some things about this movie that I'm not quite 100% on. I think that, I don't know much about French veterinary schools, but sometimes what was happening just took me out of the movie because I just kept thinking that can't possibly be a thing that happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, once you allow yourself to kind of get lost in the world that the movie creates and you understand what it's doing and, like, release yourself to it, it's very easy to get lost in. And I think that while there is gore, I never felt like it was crossing a line into exploitation. Which is something that is very, very easy for a film like this to do, especially films about cannibalism.
Hesitate to recommend this to? I understand that marketing and outlets need to find an angle, but I don't know. There are other things where I would be like, make sure you have a strong stomach to see this.
I don't really feel like that's entirely necessary for this one.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think more than anything, what there's the potential for that, and I think a lot of audiences will get squeamish around that idea, but the execution of it here is not in that way, you know.
I just love that she starts with provocation and it always has a character purpose. Like, it's always these moments that will lead into, oh, God, where's this going to go? But it's always part of, as you're saying, Brian, like, that arc. Like, that's just such a refreshing thing.
It is. It is indeed.
Sorry, I hijacked your thoughts.
That's fine.
Apologies.
I was pretty much at the end. I'll also say soundtrack is great. And the score. Mm-hmm. The score is also great. So there's a lot of good stuff here. And it makes me curious what this particular writer-director will do next.
For sure.
So that's my thoughts on Raw. It seems as though we're all fairly positive on this.
Yes.
Which is always fun.
Yeah.
Do we want to just jump into the spoilers now?
I'm
feeling like that's
with that.
The big thing. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So spoilers for Raw, starting now. What the fuck is up with this veterinary school? What is happening?
It is a giant fraternity, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not like
one large hazing
ritual. The whole school. It's like if the whole school is a fraternity, and I don't know.
That one conversation she has with the teacher is something else.
Yeah, he's like, "You're really good at this, and so I don't want you to succeed because you're scaring away all the other good people." And I was like, "Who are you? What are you talking about?" And then, like, there's this point where in the first night of hazing, when like the upperclassmen throw all the freshmen's shit out of their windows.
Yeah.
And they're like talking to this one kid. It's like, "You got in here to impress your parents?" And I'm like, "A veterinary school?" Like, this might just be a cultural thing. Like, maybe in France, the vet is like a heart surgeon or something. But like, I'm just imagining, like, how would you port this over to America? It's like, "Oh, welcome to Johns Hopkins. We're going to throw all your shit out a window. We're going to make you go to a rave. We're going to douse you in blue paint, hook you up with someone with yellow paint, and then say, don't come out until you're green." Which honestly, I feel like, is very clever.
I feel like that requires a little bit, but the part where I was like, all right, now you need to intervene is the point where she has the rash. And when she has the rash, I'm like, okay, no one else is going to be okay with this now. Yeah. Like, that would require intervention. Like, you were talking about things that took you out. Like, there was a constant dissonance I was feeling with those scenes, even as, you know, Justine and Alex and Adrian even feel like real people. But yeah, that setting feels like it needs to cater to what the story is rather than the other way around.
Yeah. It's just...
And it's a colorful environment, so it's not like you're ignoring it.
Right. And it's super weird because, like, all the upperclassmen are, like, walking around in, like... in, like, their vet coats that have, like, writing and stuff on them, and it's just, I don't know, it was weird for me, because I was like, I don't know if this is real, like, I don't know if this is really heightened, it's just, and I was just so curious about that I found it hard to pay attention to the fact this movie's about a girl who discovers she's a cannibal, like.
I'm really curious what kind of lab coats and things like that, I mean, surely... lab coats today are made to block stains specifically of the animal variety. So the fact that they're walking around after they've kind of washed up and cleaned themselves with stains
just
all over
their
coats.
Take a shower.
I'm like, did you not wash the coat? Like, what are y'all doing? Did y'all not wash the coat?
Maybe
this
they're
seems
not allowed
really dirty.
To. I don't know.
That seems really dirty.
It's super dirty. I mean, that's not hygienic at all. I can't imagine how this fucking school smells. This is the least important aspect to talk about, but it's the one that it
was the most nightmarish to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, no wonder this girl wants to eat people. Look at where she's going. I would want, like, yeah, I,
like, I
was,
I don't
expecting...
even care, like, the Fear Factor rabbit kidney or whatever. Rabbit, I'm just like, what the fuck is that paint? What is this?
I don't know. It's like, and the crazy thing is, again, it kind of sets up this concept of, like, oh, she's going to go nuts and start eating everyone. Like,
Does she eat her tooth? Is that what happens in the shower? Or did she just get, like, a chunk of his flesh stuck in the back of her mouth?
I think she got a chunk of his flesh stuck in the back of her mouth.
Why didn't she eat that originally?
You know, you get, like, a popcorn kernel. Or like,
yeah, but that was
skin.
The only one. You don't eat one popcorn kernel and then, like, 5 minutes later realize it's in the back of your mouth. Like,
I don't
that's
know,
not something that happens.
It doesn't make any sense for her to eat her own tooth, right?
I don't understand what's going on in that. I don't know why it was in the back of her mouth. I don't know.
I honestly.
Yeah, no, I think it was the popcorn kernel idea.
Yeah. Just a little piece that gets stuck. Anyway, so yeah, I guess, you know, spoiler alert, even though, like, if you're watching this movie, you probably already know she becomes a cannibal. This is the particular kind of movie cannibal where it's not like, you know, like, I eat beef, right? But, like, I don't stay hungry if I don't eat beef.
Sure.
But, like, in the movies, the best kind of cannibal is the one who can only eat human flesh. And, like, it's real jonesing if they don't get it.
Yeah, if they eat a vegetable, they throw up, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
usually,
like nope.
Blood.
Yep.
It's like, ah.
Good companion with Santa Clarita Diet, actually.
Yeah, Santa Clarita Diet. We could do a whole episode just on our favorite cannibal movies and television shows. And
well,
I would
next roundtable.
I would have at least 40 hours to talk about Ravenous. Michael, you saw Ravenous.
I finally watched it last weekend, so.
But yeah, so she begins by, like, eating what appears to be raw chicken, and she seems to get a little bit out of that. And then this is actually something I appreciated. This whole scene really, really wigged me out. Her first taste of human flesh is her sister's finger.
Yes.
Because her sister is waxing her.
Yep.
And
it is insane how she loses that finger, by the way. Like, I can go with it, but what?
Yeah, it was really messed
well,
up.
Well, I thought she died. I thought she was going to lean up and you were going to see those scissors impaled in her chest. And I was just going to like, oh, no, what is this movie?
I mean, to be honest, if my finger looked like that, I might just die right at that moment, too.
Well, all right. So if you're listening to spoilers right now and you haven't seen the movie, fine. Shame on you. But yeah, she's waxing.
Or you're just going with it, you know.
Yeah, you know, you just seeing what the fuck this movie is.
Yeah, seeing what the hell this movie's about.
So
we're in spoilers, guys.
100%. I'm trying to explain this scene.
All right,
anyway,
go ahead.
God damn it. So, she's getting waxed. The wax looks like chewing gum, which is disturbing in its own right. And yeah. She's not enjoying it. And at some point. This is, like, actually the most uncomfortable and scared I was in the entire movie. Like, the wax gets stuck, and her sister can't rip it out. And I kept expecting, like, her to just take a chunk out of her accidentally. Like, if she was falling apart because she wasn't eating people. That's what I was expecting. Not what happened. Her sister goes and grabs an intense pair of scissors and is like, it's cool. I'm just going to cut it off. And her Justine is not having it. Kicks her sister... Which, through, you know, it's one of those freak things that will never be able to be recreated in any sensical way. Her sister cuts off her own finger and then faints from shock. So Justine calls the ambulance and then sits down and scares the dog away from the finger. And then begins to nibble.
Well, she realizes that she doesn't have any ice inside the dorm room. Yeah. And so she's like, well, I guess it's just me and this finger. And she starts to look at it longingly. And then she licks some blood and then realizes she likes the blood and then looks at the finger again and realizes it's kind of like a shish kebab and goes after it.
That's the thing. I kept expecting her to just pop it in her mouth like a French fry. This is what I'm talking about when I say like this movie kind of goes in the opposite direction of what you expect. She starts nibbling on like a chicken wing.
Yep.
She kind of chicken wings it, which I was like, and then I'm like, okay, what if the ambulance shows up? Like, what if the paramedics walk in on this? Like, you should just pop that in your mouth and eat it real quick. And stole a French fry from someone. Like, yeah. Don't revel in it.
The way it's shot as well is so clever because you can see Alexa in the background and you can see the dog. And kind of the dog interacting with Alexa being passed out in like a pool of blood. And you can kind of see Alexa is, you know, out for the count for a while. And slowly she starts to kind of stir. Yeah. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, no.
Right. So her sister wakes up to her younger – I guess I should start using names. Alexa – let's just call her Alex. Alex – wakes up to see her younger sister, Justine, just nibbling, just noshing on her finger. There is an awkward silence.
The look she gives her is priceless. It's just like, I don't know whether to be disgusted or frightened or angry. And like all of these emotions just kind of run through her face all at the same time. And you're just like, wow, that is the unique look you are giving your sister right now. I cannot decipher which one it is.
Yeah. It's like, kind of like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Bill, you're totally right about that. That sequence of shots is just so great. Where it's just the close up from the front of her nibbling on the finger. Then you see her in the background. Like you get a shot where it's just enough where you can see her kind of slowly waking up. And then you get a behind Alexa's back looking like that whole sequence of shots is just so articulately done. And that's the same way, like how the fake out with the dog as well. In that exact moment as well is like, nothing is ever needed to be said. But like everything is nonverbal, that she panics that it's the dog at that moment. Like that whole sequence is just so fluid and articulate in a way you don't expect with a debut.
And that's exactly like what I was talking about. Like this is like if I had to show someone one scene from this movie, this would be it. And
yep.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like it's just a master class in in, like I said, modulating tone and tension and humor, and it's really, really weird. So from this encounter, it turns out that we find out that Alex, the older sister, is also a cannibal, which is great, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, sure, I mean, I guess growing up, you can't be like, hey, sister, take a bite of this, and then be like, haha, that's human flesh. Oh, you liked it? All right, well.
That is, you know what? That is exactly the type of thing you could do. As a, you know, I don't know much about you guys and your family life, but I have an older sister and a younger brother, and I know that the whole, here, eat this, what do you think? Ha ha, I just made you eat something weird, is like a part of growing up.
Yes, but not necessarily human flesh.
Well, sure. You know, not necessarily, but in this family, perhaps.
Ryan has an interesting family.
Sure.
Yeah. So that was the other thing I couldn't figure out. Like, how are people in school like not responding to what's happening? Is another thing that I kept thinking.
I think they're just kind of like freaked out a little bit about it, and they're just like the video of Justine like trying to nibble on that corpse's hand. Like that video is just seems like. Like kind of a, okay, she's really, really drunk and she doesn't know what the hell she's doing, right? But when she straight up bites that dude's lip off and like the next day she's just like back in class and you're like, wait,
yeah, and
wait,
her,
like, hold on.
And her male homosexual roommate, which is another thing where I was like, would they really do that? But sure, whatever. He's like, so what, was he like, is he like getting like fresh with you? Like why did you rip a chunk of his lip out? And she was like,
"Well, I
go ahead."
No, go ahead, Brian. I wanted to see what you're saying before I respond.
Well, he's asking these questions, and she's not even saying like, "Oh my god, it was terrible. He tried to rape me." She's like, "Yeah, it was whatever." She's very nonchalant about it. Like at that point, you flip into like cover mode, and she's just like. No, you know, he was like being like a little forceful, but you know, it wasn't bad. And then she's like, "Oh, by the way, I'm still super horny."
Well, I think what I like about that scene, which is just kind of it's just kind of assumed quality of the film, is just that, like strong the fact that she would react that way is like. Sorry. What I mean is like I feel like the film implicitly acknowledges that this is a world where someone like where that random dude like would, you know, try to go too far or like do something weird. And I felt like that was very intact with their character, that maybe she wouldn't bite his lip off, but also maybe the other people wouldn't be thinking that hard about it. They'd just be like, oh wow, she bit him because, you know, he tried to do something inappropriate. Like I think that is like there's a very like essential almost like feminist identity to this movie that feels very consistent. So I think that scene is just kind of representative of that. Like it seems like all of these people are very self-aware and very involved in their own, you know, exploration of self. Like just the fact that you know, she has that gay roommate and how he's treated by other people. Like it just seems like there is like an acknowledged sense of like enlightenment in the school. But that also obviously contradicts with intense hazing.
Yeah. At this veterinary college, which again, sure. It's a veterinary college. And so as time goes on, and I mean, like her sister and her have, you know, the French indie version of the final fight from Ravenous.
That's a, like, They Live fight there.
Yeah, they like kind of start they kind of start off normal, but then they just start taking chunks out of each other.
Yeah. Damn.
and then the next morning,
brawl.
And then the next morning she wakes up and she's in She's in bed with Adrian, and this is her gay roommate who she had sex with, and things got awkward. And he seems to be sleeping quite peacefully, and then she reaches down and realizes that the bed is soaked in blood, and that I would say, like, I don't know, maybe a fifth of his leg is missing.
It looks like a shark bite.
Yeah.
I was going to say it looks, maybe not a shark bite, but like how you would expect, like you get a turkey leg from the Ren Faire.
Yeah, and you take
your first two bites, you know? And it kind of comes off in strips. Yeah. Very good gore effects.
Yes.
Yeah, that looked like a man's leg stripped of many layers of necessary tissue. So he's dead. She starts crying and wondering why he, like, didn't fight her off or anything. She's very freaked out. And then she sees her sister apparently playing a video game with blood just all down her front. And then we cut to them getting cleaned up and everyone in the school kind of like hanging out in the plaza.
Well, I think it's the end of Hell Week. That's the significance of it.
This has been one week.
Yes, I swear
to God, I have it in my notes, guys.
Wow.
End of Rush Week. That's what I have.
Okay. Wow. This that movie takes place over a much shorter amount of time than I assumed. Did they say
it's
that,
an eventful
or was it
week.
Like intimated, or?
No, they say the end of Hell Week. I'm not sure where they say it in the dialogue. My girlfriend is now nodding vigorously at me, apparently.
Hold on. Okay.
We have a precedent in this show where if an unseen paramour agrees with you off mic, we have to believe you. So there you go.
I'm very sure that it takes place over a week, which potentially is another thing that feels a little rough to me. Brian, I might have to take issue with what you were saying when you were saying all of this feels like it has a purpose. I think the arc is very well defined, but I don't always think that all of the scenes work together. I think that there are parts of this movie that do feel a little bit busy and sequences that do feel like they're there for like visual flourish. Like I think of the one where she can't sleep and the sheets are going crazy, which I love how that looks, but it does feel odd in the context of like where that happens in the film. There's also like a really great image of a horse on a treadmill.
That was good.
That sleeping image, though, happens when she has, at this point, refused to eat flesh for a little while. I believe it happens shortly after her sister sabotages those people and makes them wreck into a tree. And she flips out on her sister and like walks away. And that night she has those kind of crazy fever dreams. And later that afternoon, that's when she is hazed again and painted blue and pushed up against the guy painted yellow. And then what happens there? She bites him.
That's a fair point. I'm just saying I do think sometimes this movie doesn't feel as fluid from scene to scene as it does like in the context of one scene, like the one scene we were talking about with the body waxing. I think it's very coherent in those moments, but sometimes it just does feel like the work of a debut in that sense, right, to me at times. What you're saying definitely makes sense though, Bill. I
agree with you a little bit on that scene when she's in bed, because I was like, oh, it's like Train Spotting also mixed with like the soap beating scene from a Full Metal Jacket, because it seemed as though people were like hitting her with socks full of change. It was very strange. But I liked it. It was good times.
That it takes place all in a week is, it's a lot. That's a lot to take.
I'm literally shocked to hear that. I'm looking forward to seeing this movie again, so maybe I'll be able to confirm But as I said, there is a precedent on this show that if an off-mic significant other of one of the hosts agrees, then we have to just believe it. So, Bill, you got to get an off-mic significant other if you want to become a player in this. You got to just find a girl. It's like, look, I just saw a movie. I have a very strong opinion. You need to come over to my house.
What does your Canadian significant other think?
Oh, you know, Francois up in Quebec, she just Facebook messaged me and said, Bill, you're totally right. So
let's move on. We need to start doing live podcasts.
Oh, man.
God, no, we're never doing that.
Yep.
That would be terrifying. There's so little editing in these podcasts anymore. People might as well just be listening in live. So here's
we're sorry.
Yeah, but it's fine. So here's where it ends. The sister goes to jail, the older sister, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And then Justine is sitting with her father. And he says a couple things. He's talking, you know, it's not your fault. You know, you can't blame yourself. And then we find out that his wife, or their mother, is also a cannibal and has this. So this is apparently a genetic thing that just happens around this time.
Yeah, what were your thoughts on that scene, guys?
I think I don't. Well, first of all, I saw this movie on my computer, so I don't know how it plays on a big screen. But yeah, when I was watching that scene, I was like, "Oh, he's got like a little lip thing. It's looked like he got a hair lip or a cleft palate or something."
Sure.
And then as he started talking, I was like, "Oh my god, wait! I know where this is going." And then he opens his shirt, and those looked fresh. So like, I don't know. I guess that's the best I can say. It's a little. I kind of like that better than the, oh, somehow this hazing, like, caused her to be this way.
Sure, sure.
I do like that. I think it adds a little to, like, the, like you said, Michael, the vaguely feminist streak running through the movie to have it be something that these women live with. I think it would have been interesting if they had, like, a brother who was totally fine.
It just didn't get passed on to the male gene.
Yeah, like the males are just like, I don't know, what are you talking about?
That's really weird, man.
I think it's a little overly cute, to be honest.
Go ahead.
I think that first hospital scene could make it ambiguous about whether something like this has happened before.
When he says, if you watch, don't have two daughters.
Yeah, don't have two daughters, as well as like the outside conversation, but also inside in that waiting room, there's just this bizarre feeling. And maybe I'm just getting that from where the film ends and, you know, looking back. But I do think there is just something about that ending that's overly cute, in the sense that it does kind of make it a final reveal, where I would have potentially liked it even more if it just ended at the jail. I actually really liked that, what that had to say, especially considering her sister's kind of a cruel person. Like, we haven't talked about this, but her sister, like, not only throws her into the deep end of hazing, but, like, is not particularly understanding of what she's going through.
Well, I mean, she went through it too, and she helps her to kill some people in a car to eat. I mean, there's that.
She also blackmails her. Well, doesn't blackmail her, but because she puts it out there,
really embarrasses her. Yeah, her sister's not as reserved as she is.
And she acts like a sister. She acts like a sister. I don't really mind it that much.
Yeah.
You guys don't think the video's a little bit too mean-spirited?
No, I 100% think that the video is a little mean-spirited.
Yes.
No, I mean mean-spirited to push the realm of understanding between those two characters. I feel like they had to force a conflict there, and I wish there was at least maybe one more leading event that would lead to her doing that.
No, I think that her sister's just a dick.
Well,
Alex
I think her
bitch. That's just all there is to it. She is missing
a finger unequivocally because Justine started nibbling on it.
And also because she kicked
her. This is much after this.
It's been a week.
But she hasn't really yeah.
It's only been a week. Okay. So now I literally don't know.
Use my argument against me.
Yeah, if you hadn't said that, I could be like, yeah, you know, it's been 6 months. I literally thought it was the end of the semester.
I thought so, too. She's studying for a lot of tests. My God.
So what I'll say is, I mean, her sister, you know, even Adrian says, like, why does your sister suck so much? Like, what's wrong with her?
Sure.
Like, her sister is, she is, so Justine is the, like, kind of quiet, like, awkward, blah, blah, blah. And Alex is just, like, a real party animal, like, fuck up the world kind of gal. And I dig her. I'm into it. But, yeah, she is the type of woman who would say, haha, this is going to be hilarious. Because no one else is going to know what this is all about. I will. Yep. And also, it's just like, my sister's drunk and then she's going through some shit and this is going to be hilarious. Now, what would she have done if Justine had actually managed to clamp down on that guy?
Sure.
I don't know. It's not
Alex actually videotaping it either.
No, she was. Everyone else was. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it seems like that's just the kind of person she is. She was probably drunk as well and wasn't thinking about it and was just like, hey, sis, whatever. It's fine. I'm going to chomp your cheek.
I think from where it went there, I was definitely transparently seeing what the script wanted to do at that point. So I think I like that idea that, you know, it's obviously playing on, you know, one of the time-honored tropes of hazing and like college films.
Well, not only
in terms
but, like,
of a girl being put in a compromising position. Compromising position even. You know, which is with the little cannibal flavor. But.
And a compromising position by her older sister who should be protecting her and who knows more than anyone else what she's going through. I mean, like, that's a powerful real thing here deployed for a cannibal movie. Now that I know that this movie apparently takes place in a week, I'm really starting to, like, doubt myself. Now, is it explained why the sister ate Adrian?
Not really. I think they had a feud over them. It's kind of implied that they're both
at least
attracted to him, and you know, I don't know. I guess they're having a sisterly kind of feud over that, and so I guess Alex's solution to that is to stab him in the back with a ski pole and then nibble on his leg enough to where he dies.
Yeah.
Well, I do have to say the one thing I do find interesting in the sense of Adrian, Alexa, and Justine's character is that, like, what this does get across is, even before it's about cannibalism, is it gets across that, like, being burst into new experience being put in a new experience, like, does bring out this voraciousness, like this sense of just
gotta do it all.
Exactly. And I do think the film gets at that really well, and even finds a way to look at consequences of that beyond cannibalism. You know, even things like Adrian being mad about, like, he has that great, like, single line about, like, I was in the closet for 20 years.
Yeah. I didn't hide for 20 years so I could fuck girls, I think is what he said.
Like, there's some really interesting understandings of, like, impulses, and also in line with impulses for cannibalism, but just impulses of what happens when you're put in this new situation and you're put into an environment that's entirely foreign. Yeah. And just how you overcompensate. Like, I think this movie's really good about that.
One of my favorite things this movie does is there's a scene where Justine has dressed up and put on makeup and is like, and is looking at herself in the mirror while listening to, frankly, one of the dirtiest songs I've ever heard. And
yes,
and it's
yes.
in French, which makes it worse because like you're hearing this and then you're reading the subtitles and I'm like, holy shit, this is yeah. nuts. And she starts.
There's a line that's fuck 69, give me 666, and I just cackled.
Just perfect. I mean, like, that's my new favorite song now. I'm gonna put those lyrics on my Facebook page. So, God, now I just want to look up the lyrics to this song, because it's like, it's bananas.
I've listened to the song a few dozen times.
You've listened to it a few dozen times? Good Lord. Yeah, so anyway, so she's doing that and looking in the mirror and like dancing and making out with herself. And then she finds, like, she opens the door and finds her sister and Adrian, just like playing a video game, like hanging out.
Well, one thing I like about this film a lot is it puts the dorm room experience into such a great perspective, because every single time the sound design in this film, I was always hearing things like off screen, like something was always going on. Like, and I was hearing a lot of people like yelling and talking and like chatting outside her dorm, and it kind of hits a fever pitch and she finally opens the door and there they are. And you're like, oh, those are her roommates. Oh, okay.
But yeah, there's something like kind of great in that scene about, like, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter how hard you try. Sometimes it doesn't matter how you dress up.
Sure.
Sometimes you just got to be cool enough for a guy to want to play video games with you. And I like that. It's an interesting take, and I thought it was very well illustrated. And my life will never be the same now that I know of Plus Poots que Toutes les Poots, which apparently is translated as sluttier than all the sluts.
Yep.
Which, holy shit. I don't even know what to do right now. So.
I mean, this movie just finds. Yeah, like, it just puts to shame a lot of things that I've seen that try to be edgy. Like, because the edginess is there, but it's not at all the movie.
Right.
Like, this could very easily just be a really good college movie, too. Like, I honestly don't think she needed the genre trapping. I think she does a great job with them. But I'm just saying, like, there's a lot in this movie that doesn't actually need the cannibalism aspects and are rich on their own merits.
I agree. And I think, actually, that is a good place to stop. Does anyone have any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
I'm good.
All right. Well, that is Raw. Again, out in limited release now. Check it out. I have the hiccups, so I'm going to try to
get through
this.
This movie more as we talk about it. Like, there's just a lot to talk about here.
Oh, yeah. It's a very... I'm trying not to say something that's going to sound like I'm making a play off of either the name or cannibalism. There's a lot of raw potential for conversation.
Visceral? Is that where you're going?
It's visceral. There's a lot you can sink your teeth into. You can really chew it over. Whew. Juicy. So let's move on. Today's episode was brought to you by Mubi. Mubi is the streaming online cinema that brings you a new film every day, and you have 30 days to watch, so you always have a rotating... Lazy Susan of 30 films for you to choose from. Oh my God, I don't know what's happening anymore. We also on Mubi have going on a director's survey double bill. It is a double feature devoted to taking the artists and craftsmen behind the camera and putting them in front of it. So they have their great directors, which will include interviews with Bernardo Bertolucci, David Lynch, and many others. And you can get Mubi free for 30 days by going to mubi.com/filmstage. Again, that is mubi.com/filmstage. Next week, we will be talking about Song to Song. And
what's that?
Song to Song. I don't know. It's just a new film by this guy, Terrence Malick. And I'm sure that we won't like it. So Yes. We'll be talking about Song to Song, and also hopefully we'll be able to talk about T2 Trainspotting. I was kind of hoping we would get to that this week, but it turns out that this is one of those movies that has a crazy release schedule, and it was only in 5 theaters this weekend.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, so hopefully next weekend. We will be talking about T2 Trainspotting. I swear to God that we will. Whenever we can, we will talk about it. We will never, however, talk about Beauty and the Beast. So
maybe we'll do a mini or something.
On what? Beauty and the Beast?
A mini of T2.
Yeah, necessary. We can do a double. We can do a mini. We can do whatever we want. We have basically unlimited creative control over this podcast. So
a 3-hour podcast next week is what you're saying.
Yeah, there'll be a podcast next week. We're also going to do a roundtable this week. Bill, for some reason, was super into just talking about the experience of theaters, and we have come up with two topics that will involve what I assume is a lot of screaming, a lot of cursing, a lot of insults, a lot of hurt feelings. It's going to be
great.
It's going to be great. So keep your ears peeled for that. It's a very disgusting image. Let's get out of here. So Bill Graham, why don't you tell the fine people at home where you can be found between now and the next time?
I can be found reflecting on what kind of week I had on the film stage, or oops, sorry, wrong one, Twitter, at CableBFG. You can also find me on the film stage as well.
All right, Michael Snydell.
You can find me continuing to eat meat even as I watch cannibalism movies at Twitter on at Snydell. And you can find my writing at Filmstage and Pace Magazine. The piece on the Lookout that I talked about a couple weeks ago is coming along and should be out for the end of the month.
Awesome. And I am Brian.
Oh, no.
You can find me every day on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, talking about awesome stuff. I was going to say posting pictures of all the delicious food I'm eating, but I never do that because that is a waste of time and bandwidth. Now, you can also read my stuff at filmstage.com and my personal site, dearfilm.net. So, ladies and gentlemen, we got a bunch of stuff coming at you with a roundtable and a new podcast next weekend. So, stick around, and we look forward to hearing from you soon. Je pratique le sexe après la mort, le sexe après la mort. Je pratique le sexe après la mort, le sexe après la mort. La drogue me dit bibi, chouchou, je t'aime que pour le mili. Si mon nom c'est Dolly, niche en euro, je suis trop girl. Écoute au poison tous mes gris qui je te défonce même si t'es joli. If I found a person who earnestly loved that song and everything it stood for, I think I would be terrified.